Hour number two here on Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad. Marquise Munson taking you through this Wednesday morning. Joe, we had a lot of discussion with Andy Staples yesterday about the landscape in college football right now. And we know the SEC is still holding on. They're trying to do everything they could do, exhaust every option to try to get this season played in the fall. The Big Ten and the Pac-12 have announced that they will not be playing in the fall. But do we think there's any chance that the Big Ten specifically, because I don't know about the Pac-12 as much, I think the Big Ten's getting a lot of blowback for the way that they've handled this situation. Do we think there's any chance they could reconsider the decision that they've made, or is it too late in your opinion at this point?
Yeah, I mean, Andy made it sound like, you know, there's just no way logistically to make that happen. But the thing is, a lot of these teams are, well, first of all, again, they're college students, so they're not pros who just are in to play. It's like Fast Times at Ridgemont High, you know, like, oh, I thought he just flew in for games. Yeah. Like, no, he actually goes to high school here. The kids are around, and they're working out still. So I don't think it's logistically impossible. I still think it's a huge leap, but you're right, Robbie. There's a big difference. The difference in those two conferences is, like, the Pac-12 people have said, like, testing out here right now makes it a problem.
Right.
You know, so they've got that. It's different in certainly in California and places out there. In Big Ten country, Mike DeWine, the governor of Ohio yesterday, just said, like, high school sports is on. So as someone
received very well by Buckeyes fans, by the way.
Yeah, so as someone pointed out yesterday, so the Cincinnati Bengals, the Cleveland Browns, the Cincinnati Bearcats.
Yes.
Luke Fickell, who, by the way, will be in the story tomorrow on theathletic.com.
There you go.
And all the high school teams are all playing football, but the Buckeyes will sit and watch it all. The number one team by far in the state. So there's a lot. So I think we've got what? Meetings with parents, I believe Ohio State parents. You know, yep. We've heard Justin Fields yesterday make his case, and he was asked about, are you worried about, you know, the health ramifications? And his point was, well, we feel like you have a better chance of getting the virus not in this environment playing football. I mean, that's a big part of the argument.
And by the way, Justin Fields is on Good Morning America today. So
he's making the rounds.
He's making the rounds to get football being played.
Maybe we can get him on.
He's hitting it hard. There you go. I can ask. But I don't know. Is it realistic? Bill Rabinowitz, speaking of Ohio State, great reporter for the Columbus Dispatch, has covered the Buckeyes for a long time. So here's a tweet he sent. An attorney I respect who long worked inside college football programs, and he makes clear it's not Tom Mars. Tom Mars is a guy who's actively involved in a lot of college stuff. He was involved in Cade Mays trying to get his waiver for this season, which somehow was turned down. But this is Rabinowitz. He predicts, this lawyer, that pressure from parents, players, and some schools will result in Big Ten reconsidering its cancellation of fall sports. COVID-19 might force a recancellation, but he expects a second chance. He said if the waiver liability is, well, waived, that would be a big development. The new saliva-based COVID-19 test, we've talked about that, Saliva Direct, approved by the FDA, I believe, Friday, also could be a big step toward a second look. I mean, this is the thing. If you're the Big Ten, and again, like in Ohio in particular, it really stands out because right now the AAC, and I talked to Luke Fickell the other day, on Friday, I talked to Luke Fickell, Cincinnati's coach, and he was just heading out for a Friday night practice. And I was like, so how are you handling this right now with the uncertainty? And he's like, one thing I've told the guys is it's like the NFL. You guys all want to be in the NFL? In the NFL, you know that you can be cut any day.
Yep.
So, but you got to go out there and work, and you got to be ready to work, and you got to be prepared for that. But right now, we are going, yes, there's a lot of worry about these kids in the back of their mind being like, man, are we going to get the rug pulled out from under us? It's in the SEC too. But imagine if it all does go forward and the SEC plays and the Big 12, and they all play and they have a successful season. Everything's fine. The virus goes down. There's no major issues. And the Big Ten's sitting there like, huh? I mean, it's not a pretty thought for a lot of people in the Big Ten. And so then I guess you're just out of the national championship discussion and all that stuff. I mean, I know these are football things we're talking about. They're not as important as real life stuff, but this is the blowback on this has been pretty severe. And the fact that presidents in the Big Ten can't tell us that there was a vote or not, the whole thing
is
really
weird.
Bizarre. It was a very poorly messaged, explained, and planned situation by the Big Ten.
What do you make of the idea I tossed out there yesterday to Andy of what happens if the SEC, the ACC, Big 12, they all play in the fall and things go relatively smoothly? I don't think they're going to go perfectly. Like, I think that's probably unrealistic to imagine, but they go relatively smoothly to the point where you're able to finish the season in the fall and you're ultimately able to have a national championship winner. What do you do if you're the Big Ten and you're the Pac-12 and things look good in the spring and you're like, man, we just lost a ton of money by not playing this season? Maybe we could recoup some of that here in the spring. Like, what do you do at that point?
Well, that's the thing. If you're the Big Ten, honestly, you really need the dominoes to eventually fall down here because you need a spring season to be relevant.
Right.
You know?
Like, does anybody really care if you're having a Big Ten season in the spring with nothing really on the line other than a Big Ten championship?
Like, if all this stuff happens, and again, what we don't know, like the college football playoff, they have put out a statement and said, well, we're planning to do our thing. We're planning to judge the teams that are on the field and do what we do. We know the SEC title game right now is, what, pushback 2 weeks. That doesn't mean the college football playoff has to be changed at all. But let's say you go through all this stuff and they do the college football playoff. What is the value of your quote-unquote spring season now? It's just spring football. Now, Big Ten teams have huge fan bases, and the potential to watch Michigan, Ohio State play, Michigan, Michigan State play, and Iowa, Nebraska play. I mean, like, people, especially if they can go to the games then versus now, I mean, that's one of my arguments for the spring is, what if you actually can have good fan attendance
right. Because
things got better? But if the college football playoff is over and everything, and this is just like playing to be the Midwest champion, like, I mean, that's like during like the flu epidemic of 1918, like, we are the champions of the West. You know, I mean, there's no real value.
Way to go.
It. Many selectors picked us the champions, you know.
Got a text in on the text line that says, if they try and only get a game or two in the fall and it fails, does that shoot themselves in the foot and eliminate a possibility of a spring season? That's a good question.
That's a great question. I would say, like, if it's – I think that is so much about when it happens. He said a game or two, right?
Right.
I think if it's that early, you could say, okay, so we're talking about, like, mid-October. You could say, okay, it's just not happening.
Let's pick this up again in March.
Everyone take a break and – yeah. I mean, there's always going to be the people who say, how could you have – this is the argument against spring season. How could you have a season and then this much, only a few months later, another season?
Right.
But if it's one or two games, again, let's also take into account what we haven't had. I mean, even just like spring football didn't happen.
Right.
That's some kind of contact you didn't have. But, like, what if it's 5-6 games into it or something? I mean, I think you're probably just – that's it.
Yeah, you just got to pull the plug at that point.
But that's a great question, and that's one of those things you also – that's why all these things have to be planned. Like, every single – and I've been told by ADs, like, oh, we have looked at, like, every possible model that you could look at, which I would assume would be true. But, man, the Big Ten people didn't have anything
to tell. I don't think
they
looked at every possible model of the Big Ten.
I mean, their plan was like, oh, gosh, that'd be awesome. And Jeff Brohm has to sit there and stay up all night and put together a plan for the Big Ten spring schedule. I mean, so I've heard the ACC, Brian Kelly said the ACC had one, but you should have a plan for every possibility. And so what is that? That should be one of the things you ask. Okay, what's the cutoff? How many games can we play where now you just have to rule out the spring? How far along is too far? How many can we play? And if it goes bad, we can say, okay, we're going to punt to the spring.
Do you think there's any chance – that they should consider expanding the playoff this year?
Yes.
In terms of making it a one-time thing. Hey, when things are back to normal, we're going back to four teams. We like the way it was, but we realize that in today's world, you just got to adapt sometimes. And this year we've got to adapt because I think there's a very real possibility, especially if the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12 all play, there's a very real possibility that you could have I don't know. I'm just going to throw teams out there. You could have Alabama finish a season at 8-0. Like, they're not able to get all 10 games in, but they're 8-0. Clemson finishes all their games. They're 10-0. And somebody in the Big 12 is 9-0. And then you've got some 8-1 teams. Like, who do you put in the playoff at that point? It's just an interesting conversation.
If there's a fall playoff, if they have this season and they play, then I think they should have an 8-team playoff. One time only, like you said. I mean, look, if other conferences aren't playing each other, that every year sort of sets your – you've got a handful of big games that kind of set, okay, this league's top team beat this league's top team.
Right.
Now – no matter what, we're always going to think the SEC is the best or right there, you know, right? And the Big Ten's right there. But I think because of that and because you have fewer games, now add another level to the playoff. Let more teams be involved in it. If they do a spring season, and to me it would have to be 8 games at most, I think they should do a 12-team playoff.
Yep.
And just add the games that way. I think it would be awesome. That was my argument for, like, Vols. 7-1,
their
schedule gets lighter, and they're a playoff team. What would that mean to Jeremy Pruitt's program to say, my third year, we were a playoff team?
That's right. Never mind the circumstances.
You know?
Doesn't matter.
But if it's a fall, I do. I think they should really think. I don't know the viability of that, but, look, everything should be up in the air right now. All waivers should be approved right now. Everyone's eligibility should be frozen right now. During the season, that's just how it should be. And a lot of these things, the red tape that is often involved in this sport, should be cut away right now, just to help with all the other uncertainties we have.
When we come back, what do we make of the possibility of having fans in the stands for this college football season in the fall? We'll discuss that next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Marquise Munson. Joe, as we were getting off the air yesterday, we had some breaking news from the mayor's office announcing that through the month of September, there will be no fans at Nissan Stadium. So that means no fans for Nashville SC games, no fans for the Titans home opener against the Jaguars on the 20th, I believe, of September. Not a huge surprise. I do think that there are some consistency issues in decisions that are being made that I talked about a little bit yesterday. But we'll leave that on the table for right now. Philip Fulmer came out yesterday, and we're going to have Alex Apple from Fox 17 on in the next segment, who I believe was there for the press conference yesterday, and said that the goal for Tennessee this year for home games is to try to have 25% of the capacity at Neyland Stadium filled. Obviously, you can't have much more than that in today's climate, especially on a college campus. And we've talked at length about the risks involved this year and our skepticism on whether or not college football is going to take place. What do you make of teams? I think Alabama's aiming for 20%. Tennessee came out and said 25%. Like, what do you make of college football teams in the SEC aiming for about a fourth of their capacity being filled in stadiums, which, if you've been to a college football stadium, that's still a pretty substantial number.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's makes sense. It's around I think the Chiefs in the NFL, we're going to see different situations in the NFL. Well, we're going to see different situations in college too, because obviously, like, Vanderbilt is here in Nashville. I mean,
right.
you're still dictated by your community, but I think that sounds about right to me. You talked about inconsistency, Robbie. There's a lot of situations you can find in this city that, to me, are more problematic than, like, 15,000 people at Nissan for a Titans game.
Spread out outside.
We could go right now after the show, and we can go downtown lunchtime and find situations indoors that, to me, are a lot less people, but not separated, not masked, and indoors, where the virus, I think we can all agree on this science, the virus spreads way more easily indoors than outdoors.
Correct.
That's not one of those that's really a contested point on the virus.
No.
Now, again, I know you can find Dr. Slavlafla, who says something that, like, fits your narrative out there, right? But for the most part, most doctors would all agree that outdoors is better than indoors. And so I look at a Titans game or a Nashville SC game and say, man, or 10,000. I mean, to me, obviously there's money to be considered here. These teams would love to make a little bit.
Have some, yes.
And get some. But, like, even atmosphere, 5,000-6,000 people can make some noise and give you some kind of an environment. I understand that, like, providing environments for teams is way down the list of things that are important right now. But I also still struggle to see why you can't figure out a small number in given our environment. Again, given what is allowed in other situations.
Yeah, and I heard some people yesterday kind of talking about, okay, like what happens if you open it up for, let's say, 10,000 people to come to a Titans game and you get people all crowded around each other in the bathroom or in the concession stand line. They're going to take their masks off. I hear that. I understand that. But again, go to a restaurant. You can have your mask on as you walk through the door, but it's okay to take it off as soon as you sit down at the table. You're going to the bathroom in the restaurant anyway. Like, I get there's no perfect solution to this because we're kind of all figuring this out on the fly. But there are just things that don't make sense that we're pointing out right here. Indoors, and then you move it outdoors, and all of a sudden you just can't have it. Like, there's no consistency to it. And I think that's why people largely have been frustrated throughout this as well. I've heard from a lot of people that own businesses downtown, that work. I got a lot of friends that work downtown. And they are just so beyond frustrated with some of the things that are allowed to happen and some of the things that aren't.
Yeah.
And that's what we're talking about here with this decision yesterday from the mayor's office about Nissan Stadium. Look, I mean, to me, a stadium that holds about 70,000 people, you get 10,000 people in there, you require masks to be worn while you're in there. I know some people are going to break those rules at some point while you're eating, while you're going to the bathroom. I understand that. But space people out enough with 10,000 people in a 70,000-seat stadium outdoors that even if that happens, you feel pretty comfortable about it. Like, if you're sitting on a park bench with somebody 15 feet away, like Nick Saban does with his mother, and you don't have masks on, you're still probably going to be okay outside. So there are ways to mitigate this risk it just kind of seems like they said, you know what? We're not even going to try to deal with that. We're just going to cancel it. We'll reevaluate come October.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things with the Titans games, of course, is getting in. This has been a long time complaint
sure.
from fans. And some of it is
justifiably so.
Yeah, no doubt. And the Titans have acknowledge it, and they've tried to do some things to make it better. I mean, I think a lot of it is also fans getting that last beer in and trying to make kickoff. You know, I mean, some of it is
rushing in at 11:50.
Yeah, but still, that's a concern. Is when you talk about piling people on top of each other, is in situations like that. So you'd have.
But then again, I mean, you're still at that situation talking about 70,000 people versus 10,000. Like, that
yes.
should make a big difference.
Right, right. No, I agree. I mean, I still think if you have a bunch of latecomers, then you might get a little bit of a pileup. You got to try to deal with those situations and plan for them. Hey, you know, in Nolensville, we've got middle school football happening, high school football, and, you know, concessions are going to be allowed. And so, you know, it's like you're going to have to put – there's like a plexiglass thing. We had a parent meeting last night, you know, to give out the prepackaged foods, and there's going to be signs on the, you know, stand here. I mean, you see them. It's all over the place now. Anywhere you go, if you go somewhere, if you go get takeout, you know, this is where you stand.
Right.
Or if you go to the supermarket, you go get groceries. You can do the same thing at these games. Does it mean everyone's going to comply with it at all times? Probably not. But I just – I feel like there's a benefit, and again, the inconsistency is the problem. If everything's locked down and that's that, okay, well then, that's what the city's got to do. But it's not. That's not what's happening right now.
And they're not going to go back to that either. I mean, it's like they're in limbo. And I think I heard Floyd Reese say this yesterday on Jared and the GM. Like, they're not going back to shutting everything down because of the economic ramifications that come along with that. But they're also not going to open everything up at this point either. So when you approach it that way, while I understand the thinking behind it, you're leaving yourself open to the criticism that you're inevitably going to get when this happens. I mean, that's just the world we're living in nowadays. And again, I don't envy these people because having to make decisions like this on the fly in a global pandemic that we're still learning about the ramifications on the virus – on a day-by-day basis, I get it. That's tough, and sometimes there are decisions that you have to make that are just not going to be popular. I understand that, but there is a whole lot of inconsistency going on. Joe, were you surprised that college football teams are making the effort to have fans in there, or did you just expect them to say, hey, you know what, this year – we're just not going to be able to do it. We're not having any fans at all.
I'm not surprised. And, again, I think you look at Neyland Stadium, for example. If what did Fulmer say?
25%.
Yeah, 25%, which is still a lot of people. That's a huge place. You talk about a place where you can social distance. You know, it's a big, big place. Yeah. I'm not surprised. And to me, it sounds reasonable. I mean, you're going to have to put a lot of things in place to try to manage it and try to keep people apart and all that stuff. But – again, like open air. I mean, to me, there's a huge difference. I know Jerry Jones said they can whoosh out the virus, like with their, you know, with Jerry World, like the door closes and the virus whooshes out.
Their magic fans in there.
Yeah. But huge difference to me between the open air and the not open air stadiums. But places like Neyland, I mean, that stuff can go just straight up. I'm now acting like a scientist. I'm not
out into the river.
Yeah, it's fine. just. Flip on a lighter and light it away. No, I mean, it's you're right. It's not easy to go through this. The people who are making decisions. You know, at the press conference yesterday, the chairman of the coronavirus task force was asked about, like, what it will take to get fans. Because, I mean, like, for the Titans, they got a huge homestand in October.
Yep.
I mean, I think it's three games in a row, you know, starting with the Steelers. I mean, these are big games. Of course, they'd love to have some kind of – and there's no firm, like, if we are here, then this will happen. It's just sort of like, I hope it gets better. That's another thing with this. And I know, again, it's not easy to do it, but it'd be great if guidelines were set like this equals this. We can do this. I mean, it's the same thing with playing football, like with the Big Ten. Tell us, what exactly did you see? What exactly is causing the decision? Who voted? Did you vote? Transparency, it's often lacking, and in stuff like this, you know, the more the better. But I don't know, Robbie. I'm not optimistic that things are going to change and we're going to see fans in October. I'd love to think so, but I at this point, if we don't know what it's going to take.
Like, how do you evaluate when to change? Yeah.
Yeah, and do we think that things are going to get better in this sort of half-open society we have right now to make it better?
Well, the other part, like the NFL, you know, you've got some teams, like the Chiefs are going to try to have fans in. Some teams are going to try to have fans in and are going to be able to do it, at least for the start of the season. Like, is that a competitive advantage? You know, the NFL is all about not having competitive advantages. I mean, how do you handle that if you're the league? Like, there's not really much you can do about it.
No, right, exactly, and it is. I mean, if the Chiefs have whatever their stadium holds, 70,000, if they have 20% of that, you know, don't hold me to my math, but, you know, so you're talking about 15,000 people, something like that. Again, that's still something. I mean, it's still
better than piping in crowd noise, for sure.
You still get the endorphins if you score a touchdown and, like, you hear people – other than, like, your coaches clapping from the sideline.
Wally
right?
in Section 113 is going wild, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's still some benefit to that. It's not – you're not going to have that overwhelming noise that can, like, mess up a team on third down. You know, that's a funny thing, too, is, like, you think about, like, the Saints.
Yeah.
You know, the indoor stadiums really – or the Vikings, where it can really get, you know, to be problematic for the opposing team. And those places, to me, are, like, it's just a non-starter, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got to be.
But, yeah, I think you're right. I mean, if the Chiefs have that and then we go in the playoffs and the Chiefs know their home field actually means something, but the Titans have a home playoff game and who cares because there's still no one allowed in. Yeah, that has an impact on the result of the tournament.
When we come back, Alex Apple from Fox 17 will join us. We'll continue this discussion about both college football having fans and here locally in Nashville as well. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic. Talking fans in the stands, both in college football and here locally in Nashville. And to help us do that a little bit more, let's bring in our good buddy Alex Apple from Fox 17 News here in Nashville. Alex, what's going on, brother?
Oh, I'm hanging in there, guys. You guys are doing a great job. Love listening so far this morning.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate that. So, Alex, am I correct in saying that you were there yesterday for the press conference with the governor and Philip Fulmer?
Right. A little unexpected surprise to have Coach Fulmer there, but it's clear that the governor really wants there to be football and some fans come a couple weeks here now.
So what was your biggest takeaway from what Fulmer had to say? I believe 25% capacity is kind of the target number that they're shooting for. Was that surprising to you? What did you kind of take away from what Fulmer had to say?
I think it's just all a big cross your fingers, and this is what we're really hoping for. Hopefully everyone wears a mask, hopefully once more students get back on campus, we have a relatively safe learning environment. You don't want to have happen like happened with North Carolina recently, where the campus had to largely close. And so, yes, they're hoping for about 25,000 fans in Neyland Stadium. That's a pretty good number, sitting in groups of up to six. So you go with five friends, you can sit with the six of you all together, and then have seat space between you and the rest of the fans or whatever other groups. I tried to really get a sense of exactly like the vision of this, because how you control fans once they get into the stadium, I think, has always been tough. Is there going to be an usher halfway down the aisle saying, you know, Joe and Robbie, you guys stay over there, you know, away from this other group? I don't really know how that's going to work, but it's what they're hoping for, and it is really a hope. To say that it's a foregone conclusion would be putting the horse before the cart, but at least it's a step in a positive direction for us sports fans. They're going to try, and here's to hoping with them that works out.
Yeah, one of my buddies took my boys to the Tennessee-South Carolina game last year. I was in the press box covering it. They were in the stands, and my kids are like, the drunken brawls were just incredible in the upper deck. Like, they just, like, they couldn't believe some of the stuff people were saying and doing. And so you think about people in those stadiums having to deal with that, or you know, people in stadiums having to deal with people trying to, like, move down to a better seat and stuff like that. So now add in, don't get close to each other. Oh, and you better keep that mask on. I want to ask you that, Alex. Was there talk about enforcement of masks for these crowds at the games?
Yeah, so they said that they would mandate masks, and they said that they would have full staffing akin to if the stadium was filled with 104,000 people in it. And that's because they'll basically have to space people out. Like, most of the stadium will still have people in it in some capacity. I suppose the upper levels of the upper deck might be clear, but I think that the way that they're going to have to space people, they're looking at most sections still being filled. So if you're a team trying this right now, Titans, Vols, what have you, you've really got to staff the entire area, and you probably need those staff anyway, because just like you were just talking about, if you're going to make any effort to enforce these masks requests, or if you're going to enforce, distancing in some capacity, you're going to need plenty of staff there, even though you're not doing a lot of the things. There's no Vol walk. There's no band walk. There's 75% less people in the stadium. But in order to make it safe for those 25,000, you've really got to staff up and pay full time. I mean, Bill Fulmer estimated yesterday that it's a $30 to $40 million loss for the university, even if they can only have 25%. And so you think about what the Titans are facing then as well. Granted, it's a little bit different being a professional franchise. No concessions at all. No fans at all. You know, this is a major economic decision as well. And you guys were talking about it before the break. When you compare these two, let's compare Vols, Titans. So you've got one in Knox County, one here in Davidson County. The positivity rate of the virus is about the same in both areas. And what that means is basically the amount of people that get tested, if it's 100, if it's 10,000, the percentage of people testing positive is pretty close to the same. Usually in Tennessee, that's about 8 to 9%. The difference is Nashville's history with 22,000 cases total, 17,000 more cases than Knoxville, is probably the reason why Mayor John Cooper made that decision. Now, there's a lot of people who believe if you're outside, like you all were talking about, the virus has a lot more chances to go somewhere other than to another person and infect them. But the numbers are relatively similar aside from the overall number of cases in Knox County and Davidson County. So it just shows to show you there's a lot of opinions about the a lot of variety in opinion about the best way to tackle this fall. And it's going to be really interesting just from a high-level onlooker's perspective of what happens here. Because is Tennessee going to be successful doing 25%? No idea. If they are, then in that case, maybe the Titans look a little bit too cautious, or Mayor John Cooper looks a little bit too cautious. But on the other end of the spectrum, Tennessee doesn't want to get made a fool of. Dondi Plowman, the university chancellor, said yesterday in the press conference, if anybody tells us that we shouldn't be doing this from the SEC's medical task force, then we won't do it. So it is entirely a day-by-day thing right now.
Alex Apple from Fox 17 on the line with us. And Alex, you mentioned the decision that Mayor Cooper made yesterday, essentially saying no fans at Nissan Stadium through the month of September. Were you surprised that that happened, and how realistic do you think it is that at any point this fall there will be fans in Nissan Stadium for Titans games?
Well, so it's August 19th as we sit here right now, and the first game is roughly a month away in Nissan Stadium. What is going to change in the next month? Because there's a story that I've been working on about the state's approach to the whole coronavirus thing. And at this point, it's not unfair for some people to believe that we're kind of just waiting out the clock, that we're running out the clock until we can get a virus and hoping to keep things sort of status quo, not getting any worse, able to treat everyone that gets ill, and then just hope that the vaccine comes sooner rather than later. So what's going to change that's going to change John Cooper's mind in October? I think the big answer to that would be if he is able to see other places successfully have some fans and not trace any illness back to it. So NASCAR has had several races across the country with fans, with a good degree of success so far. One of the things that the University of Tennessee officials that spoke yesterday were talking about was they had 25,000 fans at a Bristol race earlier this year. They are using that as a model for success because there was no illness traced back to the people that attended that race. And so they're looking at that as a model to follow, as a sign of hope that they can make this happen. And I think that the more successful iterations of events like that happen, I think that's the one thing that could change as far as Nashville's landscape and the ability to go to the Titans games. Fortunately, they only play one game in September at home. So it would be the fourth game of the season. That's against the Steelers. Maybe there will be fans then. As far as like what virus data will have changed between now and then, maybe I'm too pessimistic. It's hard to see that it will have changed all that much unless John Cooper is just going to base this off of how successful other places have been.
Now, that's a great point. On either way, you know, what Tennessee looks like, how they do with this, if they play, if they end up going through with this, could probably impact how they feel here. Yeah, and the problem for the Titans there is the Vols don't have a home game until October, so then you wait for the data from that, and now that
right.
You know, obviously, if you're a Titans fan, you'd love to think that you might be there for that home stand in October. But if that's really what it is, and basically, Alex, I can't see anything else. Like you said, like they couldn't pin down like A plus B leads to C, so it probably has to be something like that, which probably means best case for the Titans is later, right? I mean, realistically, Tennessee's success won't be really known until about the end of October.
Right, and yeah, you know, Nashville has, it's really nice and transparent for all of everyone that lives here. This is like dashboard where they look at all of these metrics and they light them up either green, yellow, or red. Anyone can go look it up. And the transmission rate in Nashville good right now, the 14-day new case trend good right now, public health capacity, testing capacity good. Hospital capacity is in the yellow right now, which means mediocre, as is the positive test rate. You know, that looks a lot better than it looked 3 weeks ago. So maybe there is a chance that, you know, it will continue to get better and Nashville's mask mandate will really make a difference. I would love to see Vanderbilt reach a decision, but I know that they're meeting with Nashville leaders, so a lot of SEC schools are sort of doing what the rest of the SEC is going to do, and that is charting their own course. I don't think Vanderbilt's going to be afforded that same luxury. It would be wild to have in the same city Vanderbilt allowing fans in and the Titans not. Of course, that would be the closest comparison that you could make. You know, if you're John Cooper looking at Vanderbilt did okay, we can allow the Titans fans to be in. I just don't think that – I mean, I can't imagine that Vanderbilt is going to somehow get fans and the Titans are not, with John Cooper presiding over both. But what a disadvantage for Vanderbilt as well. You know, Tennessee's going to get 25%. Texas A&M, where Vanderbilt plays week one, I believe, probably going to get 25%, how things work in Texas. And Vanderbilt's going to have zero. That's also quite an inequity. Now, there, you know, insert joke about Vandy fans here, but it, regardless, I think it's going to be very difficult for Vanderbilt to have any fans compared to the rest of the SEC, which seems like it will.
Alex Apple from Fox 17 has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Alex, great stuff as always, my friend, and thanks for joining us, man. We appreciate it.
Take care, gentlemen.
Absolutely. Alex Apple, Fox 17 News. That's interesting stuff. I mean, it is kind of crazy to think about, like, what if Vanderbilt had fans and the Titans didn't?
Yeah, I can't imagine.
I can't imagine that taking place either, but.
Yeah, Candace Lee put out a statement, didn't say one way or the other, but basically, you know, they're going to take all advice and see where they stand. I'd be surprised if it turned out that way. But that's a good point by Alex. If the football happens, if most of the other places are allowing these, you know, these quarter-sized crowds or whatever, and Vanderbilt doesn't have it. I mean, I guess if we're, again, taking this to the football field, an impact on outcomes of games.
Yeah.
You know, 0-10 is 0-10.
Right.
You know, still, it's unfair.
When we come back, a whole bunch of craziness happening yesterday in both the Stanley Cup playoffs and the NBA playoffs. We'll dive into that next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stream 102.5 The Game from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app. Enable our Alexa skill or Google Home and ask to play 102.5 The Game or live stream from our website, thegamenashville.com. Welcome back in. Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic. Joe, it was a big day yesterday in both the Stanley Cup playoffs and the NBA playoffs. Some upsets, some eliminations. Had a little bit of everything yesterday. Vegas sends the Chicago Blackhawks home, which I know makes Predators fans very happy. Chicago dismantled in five games against the Vegas Golden Knights. Not a huge surprise there. Vegas looks like an absolute buzzsaw right now. They are very, very good. I'm very much hoping for a Vegas-Colorado series.
Yes.
Because I think that's going to be amazing.
Yes. Talk about up and down, fun, high-level hockey if we get that series. So, nice story for the Blackhawks to advance. I mean, hey.
Watching the Blackhawks fans' like reaction to it, though, is just – I think they, like, legitimately got fooled into believing that they're good, and they're not. They have some nice young pieces, and they have Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews.
Right.
But they're not good.
Yeah, there's that
There's still a long way to go for them.
Yeah, obviously you have that hope that you can bring everything up and still have those two guys, you know, be a key part of, like, a rebirth. And, look, they got deeper than the Preds did this year.
They did.
So 3 years after the Preds, quote-unquote, you know, killed
ended the
off
dynasty.
Their – yeah, and they did. But there's some sort of comeback with the Blackhawks, but that was a reality series. A little bit of a reality for the Canadians going on right now, too.
Yep. Down 3-1 to Philadelphia after their loss yesterday. Dallas with a big win against Calgary, go up 3-2 in that series. Barry Trotz had the chance last night to eliminate his former team in the Washington Capitals, up 3-0 in the series.
And 2-0 in the
game.
Got up
2-0 in the game in the first period. And then Alex Ovechkin just took over. He was unbelievable yesterday. Washington with a 3-2 win. Still a lot of work to do, though, if you're the Capitals. I just don't see them coming all the way back against that Islanders team. I just think they're too stingy defensively. Varlamov's been playing too well in net. Barry Trotz is not going to let that team lose four games in a row.
Right, and so the Islanders advancing, becoming a bigger story in the playoffs, we think. So if you're a Rangers fan right now, you're feeling great about the lottery, but how do you –
Which, by the way, come on.
Yeah, well, of course it was rigged.
Come on.
It's always rigged. But then how do you feel about having to sit there and watch the Islanders in the bubble keep moving through the playoffs? Does that sour you a little bit?
Oh, yeah, that sours you. There's no question about it. That's a once great rivalry that has not been there lately. I think we're getting close to that coming back.
But there's hatred.
There's hatred there for sure. In the NBA, Munson's beloved Lakers dropped game one to the Blazers. And it was really a game where Lillard was cooking early. They didn't have any answer for him. LeBron started to get it rolling a little bit in the second quarter, but they just didn't have enough outside of LeBron and AD yesterday. And LeBron, to your point, Munson, I think he finished with 15 assists. Just dishing the ball too much, though. You got
It got to a point in the game to where you like, and I think I tweeted this out. I said, LeBron, I need you to just take over for like 3 minutes. That's all I need. And he was, and I understand he's trying to get everybody acclimated to the offense. You know, if you see Danny Green open in the wing, you're gonna pass it to him. But there was a couple shots to where there was one in particular where he passed up on a layup and then try to dish it out, and then he caused a turnover when he could have just went up against Whiteside and drew a foul and went to the line to miss two free throws, as he's been doing over the past couple weeks. But it's just like, and I'm speaking now NBA analysis, Marquise, not Laker fan, Marquise. It's just Lakers have no depth, and their backcourt is weak. And, you know, when you're relying late in games for Alex Caruso and Kyle Kuzma and, you know, Danny Green and Caldwell Pope to be on the floor with you and late in a game, you're just not going to win basketball games that way. You know, Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, Nurkic, and, you know, those guys are on a tear. And I just, the Lakers just can't respond because they have no depth. And losing Rondo, and which Rondo will probably be back soon. I think he's quarantined at this point.
Yeah.
But losing Rondo and losing Avery Bradley was a big blow for the Lakers because Avery Bradley brought defense and he can hit those wide open threes that Danny Green's missing. And then Rondo also provides that defense and, you know, for the backcourt. And those two guys alone defensively could have helped that Lakers team last night.
Well, they both can handle the ball. That's the big thing. Like, you've got LeBron handling the ball all the time now, which is fine. He can do that. But when he's doing that, he's going to have to be the one that facilitates. Yeah. And he can't be quite as aggressive that way.
Which, like, it's got to get to a point where, and look, I'm not saying that LeBron's losing his luster. He's losing his explosiveness. I'm not saying that.
Well,
at
he
all.
Is some.
He is some, but he's getting older. But all I'm saying is all LeBron's teams has been over his career is offenses run through LeBron.
Yep.
LeBron has never played with a player that is probably, I'm not going to say better than him, but kind of on the same tier as far as great players in the league. Anthony Davis is right there. And LeBron has never played with a player like that.
What about D-Wade, though, early in Miami? I mean, D-Wade, he could take over stretches
but
of D-Wade, games at least.
D-Wade was a good Robin. I think team is two Batmans. It's LeBron and AD. I think the offense needs to run through AD first.
Some D-Wade
and
disrespect
then
going on over here.
No disrespect at all. D-Wade was Robin. He even calls himself
I know.
He called himself Robin in the whole situation. He knew what his role was. Same thing for Chris Bosh. He knew he was the Riddler or whatever.
Nice.
So they knew their role, and I think you have to run the offense through Anthony Davis, and they didn't do that last night. And Anthony Davis is shooting threes like he's Klay Thompson, and he's not. Like, he needs to be in the paint, you know, taking advantage of having the fact that they have nobody to guard you outside of Whiteside. And so it's just the Lakers got the size to beat this team. They just didn't use it because they were trying to shoot threes, and their threes were awful last night.
Yeah,
so,
you're right. Davis has got to be more aggressive going to the basket. I mean, when he does, it works out for him unless Whiteside uses his length to block him. But, I mean, Nurkic can't deal with him at all.
Nurkic can't. Collins can't. Only Whiteside can. And then eventually you're going to get Whiteside
we'll
in foul trouble anyway.
Yeah.
So it's just, they didn't run through their offense. And like I said, I would not be surprised if the Lakers win this series, but I also would not be shocked if they lose this series because it's just the Warriors are good, or the Blazers are good. They were good last year. They're in the conference finals last year for a reason. And they got the same pieces with the exception of adding another scorer in Carmelo and a healthy Nurkic. And so they're a much better team than they were last year.
Got a text on the text line, says, go Lakers. But even before yesterday, I felt like the Lakers and Blazers were on opposite ends of the spectrum regarding chemistry, rhythm, and momentum. Blazers in six, and then AD leaves. Hot take there.
Wow.
I don't think AD leaves. But AD does need to tell the GMs and tell Lakers ownership, like, hey, this is going to be my team. The offense has to run through me. Can't run through LeBron anymore.
Well,
LeBron,
you're
like,
saying all together? Because LeBron's such a good facilitator.
He is.
You know?
But that's why, like, I don't mind LeBron being the facilitator, But you have to find Anthony Davis. He has to stop looking for Kyle Kuzma for Danny Green in the wing. Like,
I wouldn't look to Kyle
Anthony Kuzma Davis needs to be post up, and LeBron needs to find him. Or LeBron needs to draw attention to himself to find AD, because they did that a lot last night too, and they connected pretty well. AD is not – he's a good shooter for his size, but he is much better at being inside the paint. But, I mean, it's shocking that 2-8 seeds last night – you know, beat a one seed, yeah. Probably the two favorites going into the NBA Finals.
How about the Magic? Loss.
I wish 122-110
win over the Milwaukee Bucks. I did not see that one coming.
Totally blew that game off. Yeah, I was working, but I would have had it on if I thought it would have been a game. And then I like saw the score. I'm like, wait, what?
If you would have told me yesterday that Portland beat the Lakers, I'm like, okay, yeah, I could probably see that.
Yeah,
there was no way I would have believed that Orlando would beat Milwaukee.
Look, I will say this. Like, Vujicic is probably, like, one of the most underrated centers in the league. You know, yeah, we talk about Jokic. Jokic with the Nuggets is good. Nurkic is good. And then, you know, there's some other centers. Anthony Davis, obviously. But Vujicic is very underrated. He plays for the Magic, so a lot of people don't really pay. He's kind of like Devin Booker, where Devin Booker's, like, really good, and he's talented, and he's probably a star. He'll be a star anywhere else, but he plays for a crappy team.
Get out of Phoenix.
That's never in the playoffs. Like Vujicic, if he would have left Orlando and went somewhere else, he would have been a star. But, you know, he plays for Orlando.
Lakers and Bucks are both going to
– they'll win. But
these are two teams that haven't had to play a big game in a while. That game two, watch. Lakers and Bucks will both roll
in game two. And it is safe to say that when you look at the Lakers, even though they struggled last night, they stayed in the game the entire game. Like, yeah, they had a 16-point, like, they were down 16 at one point, but then they went on an 8-0 run, and then they came back in that game. They were pretty much in that game for the most part. The Bucks were not.
No.
It was the Magic just ran through the Bucks like it was like they were an 8 seed, and the Magic were a 1 seed.
Got somebody else taking issue with your Dwayne Wade slander. Ben texts in, D-Wade is top 3 shooting guard ever. Anthony Davis won't even crack the top 50, which I believe that's a hot take. Anthony Davis can't handle being the guy who disappears in the fourth quarter.
I'm not saying D-Wade even called himself
yeah,
Robin.
He was Robin, but Robin sometimes was the one who had to fight the Riddler, right? So that's what I was saying, is that D-Wade could take over stretches for that team and let LeBron kind of
breathe.
Yeah, at times when he
was
great.
Yeah, he could.
Especially
but
when he had both
of course,
knees working.
Overall, you're right. It was Batman and Robin.
But guess what? The offense didn't run through D-Wade. It ran through LeBron still, because D-Wade, and he took that role on of like, hey, if you want to take over the fourth, that's fine. Like, if D-Wade was such a Batman, he would have stepped up for the Mavs, and they wouldn't have lost to the Mavs in their first, you know, NBA Finals series when LeBron was struggling.
Well, that was the problem their first year. They couldn't figure out who's going to take the shot.
Exactly.
Like, they couldn't figure out if it was going to be Wade or LeBron.
And then they figured out, it needs to be LeBron.
Yeah.
And then so once LeBron got that okay, then he took it over.
But
so,
I would say that D-Wade did a better job, again, in stretches than what Davis is doing now, right? I mean, I think at times Davis does. He fades out and just wants to take jumpers and isn't assertive enough.
Yeah.
Like, D-Wade could be assertive and dominant.
Yeah, D-Wade is a top 3 guard of all time in this league. So, I mean, yeah. He knew what his role was, and he was perfectly fine with taking it.
And then LeBron cries about the Warriors stacking a team, by the way. But that's a different topic for a different day.
Well, they did go 73-9 the year before. But, yes, it is different. We'll talk about that another time. When we come back, Eric Bacharach from the Tennessean will join us. We'll get into some Titans talk. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.